From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. And this morning is a special one. We're going to be joined in the studio by the one, the only, Rosie Starr to help us look back at 2025 and look forward to 2026 here on Farm and Country. Last Saturday, our producer Ronald Kelson and I combed through our favorites that we worked on. We had so much fun last week that I was like, okay, I need to bring some extra friends. Rosie started to help me recap some of her top picks. From the highest mountains of the first ever Cannabliss to a magical stone path garden in Berryville, we visited the growers and farmers shaping our region. I'm honored to do this alongside longtime Farm and Country host Rosie Starr. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report in just a few. But first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. New York Governor Kathy Hochul says utility crews are on standby because of the major snowstorm slamming the region.
We are very aggressive about deploying utility crews even before a storm hits. So they're pre-positioned, and if they need to activate, they can make sure that we can get the power on as soon as humanly possible.
Hochul and the governor of New Jersey have declared states of emergency. Rob Lane from member station WBUR in Boston reports conditions could make holiday travel treacherous.
The storms will bring the first major snowfall of the year to some parts of the country. Mark Shieldrop of AAA Northeast says people should be careful on the road. He expects many drivers won't yet have switched to winter tires and may be out of practice in terms of dealing with longer stopping distances.
They follow too closely, they're going too quickly, and unexpected things happen on the road and you have to make an abrupt stop, and that's when bad things happen.
Shieldrop adds an extra word of caution that even on plowed roads, cold pavement can affect tire traction. For NPR News, I'm Rob Lane in Boston.
Ukrainian officials say Russian drone and missile attacks on Kyiv and the surrounding region have killed at least one person and injured dozens. The attacks came a day before President Volodymyr Zelensky is expected to meet with President Trump in Florida to discuss efforts to end Russia's invasion. The BBC's Samira Hussein reports that Zelensky says the bombardment shows that Russia does not want to end the war.
Into this morning, in fact, the air raid sirens have been sounding off. There are still drones that are coming into Ukrainian airspace. And according to Ukrainian officials, there were some 500 drones that were launched from Russia over Ukraine and some 20 odd missiles as well. The main target has been the capital here in Kyiv. And there has been some infrastructure damage there. And according to the Ukrainian military, there has been damage to some residential buildings here as well.
Thailand and Cambodia have agreed to a ceasefire that could end 3 weeks of fighting that have killed more than 100 people. Michael Sullivan reports from Chiang Rai.
The ceasefire signed by the two countries' defense ministers says both countries have agreed to halt their artillery attacks and rocket barrages and air attacks by Thai fighter jets on Cambodian targets. The two countries have been involved in fierce combat for weeks that began in July, then reignited earlier this month. Hundreds of thousands on both sides have been displaced by the fighting, prompted by an early French colonial map, Cambodia's then ruler, that's been disputed by the Thai side. The 72-hour lull is dependent on both sides honoring the ceasefire. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Chiang Rai, Thailand.
And you're listening to NPR News. The rain may have eased in Los Angeles, but officials say there is still a risk of flash flooding. 3 days of heavy rain led to flooding and mudslides in Southern California. The mountain town of Wrightwood seems to have borne the brunt of the damage. Mudslides buried cars there and pressed into homes and washed out roads. Officials say firefighters rescued more than 100 people Thursday night in Los Angeles. Israel has formally recognized the self-declared Republic of Somaliland as an independent state, making it the first ever country in the world to do so. Michael Koloki reports from Nairobi. There has been immediate reaction to the announcement.
In a swift response, Somalia's government termed Israel's move as an unlawful step, claiming that Somaliland is an inseparable part of Somalia. Somaliland declared independence from Somalia in 1991, but until now, it had not been officially recognized as an independent state by any country. In a statement, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that Israel recognizes Somaliland as a sovereign state and plans to immediately expand its relations with Somaliland through extensive cooperation in various sectors. Meanwhile, the chairperson of the African Union Commission, Mahmoud Yusuf, said he rejects any recognition of Somaliland, adding that the African Union had an unwavering commitment to the unity of Somalia. For NPR News, I'm Michael Kaloki in Nairobi.
Barry Bamonte has died. He was a longtime member of the English indie rock band The Cure. The band announced his death on the group's official website, saying he died after a short illness. He was 65 years old. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. And like I mentioned at the top of the hour, you know, this Saturday is a particularly special one because I have in the studio with me right now the one, the only, Miss Rosie Starr. Hello, Rosie.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Kimberly and Ronald. It's so nice to share this time with you.
I'm so excited that you're here. I was thinking about when we were coming into the studio that it's probably been a little bit of time since some of our Farming Country listeners have heard your voice. And so it's definitely a holiday treat for them. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Well, it's only been 6 months. So I started the year and you're finishing it. And now we're working together. And I've enjoyed the time addressing projects that I couldn't finish. But more importantly, I enjoyed listening to Farm and Country produce the way you do it with
so
your
sweet
journalism, with your sense of humor and your format of the show. And what I'm talking about is two segments with Keith Hubbard in the middle. So it's like an Oreo cookie.
Oh, that is so sweet. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this when Ronald and I were chatting last week that when I came on to the show, I was nervous because, I mean, it's such a beloved show, and I knew I had big shoes to fill, but I kind of just tried to embody your energy with our own twist to it, and I think hopefully, you know, folks have been enjoying it, and we've been getting some great feedback. Well, like I said, this is a special edition of Farm and Country because we're gonna recap the year together.
Okay, I'm ready. I know what my picks are. Okay. And you know what? We actually agree on a bunch of stuff.
Yes, yes. Okay, so Rosie, why don't you kick it off? Let's start with one of your favorites from this past year.
Let's see now. I mean, of course, every single show is my favorite. But what I love is how Kimberly and I found the same great people in our community. Gail Roots. Now, that Iris Gillingham.
Amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's one of the most important community members and has done so much for the airwaves and the community that you can't resist being with her. So I'm very happy that we got to work together on that. And then, shall I go on to Sally Rose?
Well, why don't we start with Iris? Because, like you said, she's such a core member of our community, the farming community. And when I was thinking of who to reach out to about what the heck do you prepare for the wintertime? How do farmers prepare? I was like, I got to talk to Iris. So let us hear some of that conversation. I'm curious what tips you have or advice you have for people who might be stocking up this winter.
For folks who are thinking about what they're going to eat this winter, I grew up with a mom who was spending a lot of time making sure that we had food throughout the winter. And probably half of the vegetables that I now grow on the farm are actually like for the root cellar or for winter. And I think a lot of the exciting thing about this time of year is you can surround yourself with a lot of abundance. So like going to the farmer's market and getting a full crate of your winter squash that you're going to need, and that's something you can easily store in your home. Going and stocking up on your potatoes and carrots and onions and what you might need. It's a lot easier for the farmer because then the farmer doesn't have to keep storing those items, and then you have them on hand. A lot of farms and people in this area always grew a lot of their own food for winter and made sauerkraut and made stuff. And even if we aren't doing quite as much of that now, culturally, it's an opportunity for people to think about what can I actually like just get from a local farmer and have, so I don't have to go out in January and think, oh, now I'm craving this thing. Right. And then you can't find it because the farmer's markets are over or the farmer doesn't have it anymore. So I highly recommend looking around your house and seeing where you can store stuff. Like turn down your fridge or turn off your fridge fan and make it actually your own makeshift root cellar.
That was Iris Van Gillingham over at Gale Ridge Community Farm in Livingston Manor. And Rosie, I was just thinking how her running this farm is one of the many things that she does. I mean, she just opened up this community pantry in Livingston Manor. I think it's called Calliope and Gale Grocers, to also address food insecurity. So definitely someone who is such a core member of our community.
Yes, I have to add that she represents a person that's well-grounded, well-rooted. Her family taught her, and she's like emerging from the soil with good roots and good intentions to blossom. What's next?
Okay, so what is next is one of my favorites, which actually comes from one of your stories. When you visited Sally Rose Garden, you aired this on June 7th. And I remember listening to it and immediately felt immersed in the actual garden. I mean, you can hear the cars driving by because it's a personal garden, but then there's also bees and, you know, the story of the peonies that she mentioned. So let's hear a little bit from that.
After sipping herb-scented ice black tea, we began a stroll on her curved stone paths set in lush, pruned green grass to share a present moment. Sally, first introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, your life, and what led you to this garden tour conservancy experience.
My name is Sally Rowe, and I came from a background that had nothing to do with gardening. I was shocked that I ever became a gardener. It just wasn't something that was introduced to me. I had no mentors. I had no experiences. And when we bought our farmhouse, I put a plant in the ground, and that was it. I just got completely turned on. And ever since then, I've had my hands in the dirt. And so that was in 1992. But it was an evolving thing. I started out slowly. I started out with annuals, and I migrated to perennials, and we were weekenders, and then we became full-timers, and so on and so forth. So as time went on, my commitment, my dedication, my seriousness in terms of this as a pursuit, a passion, it just grew and grew like the garden. And so that's how I came to gardening, not knowing anything, and I'm completely self-taught. And so it's been quite a wild ride.
That was Sally Rowe and Rosie Starr at Sally's Personal Garden. Rosie, that was such a lovely segment.
Oh, I'd like to add that Sally, her garden is like herself. She's a small statured person, like her garden is small in acreage, but it packs powerful imagery. Everything about her garden is the way it's structured, it's laid out, and she herself is just a very powerful person. She's lovely, and the experience was wonderful.
Oh, that's amazing. And I also love the beginning of the segment, how you described that, how you described just drinking this delicious tea right before you headed into the tour.
And perfectly made cookies.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so the next one is actually another one of my favorites, if that's okay, Rosie. I really loved, honestly, all of your Junior Master Gardeners segments. I love the way that you incorporated the sounds of children's voices. I think it's so fun and refreshing. And this one, I believe, is from a garden and art workshop that was held in May. So this is just a little piece of the Junior Master Gardeners program at the Western Sullivan Public Library.
Okay, guys, let's put our notebooks down for the moment.
The Junior Master Gardeners wear their hand-decorated lanyard ID cards and begin the sessions with an opening exercise called Crazy Eights. It helps to get their wiggles out.
First thing we need to do is make your body into a star. Just spreading our bodies out, making sure you don't accidentally hit anybody else or anything, mm-hmm. that you can spread your arms and move your legs. We're going to be getting the wiggles out in a little bit. Ready? Right arm. Right arm.
Right arm.
Hold out your right arm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Left arm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right arm. Leg. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Left leg. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right.
And that was the Junior Master Gardeners program at the Western Sullivan Public Library. Rosie, that was so nice hearing the children's voices and them kind of getting their wiggles out.
Kimberly, I have to admit, and Ronald will appreciate this, it was one of the most extraordinary editing experiences of my lifetime. I have to admit.
Yeah, say more. Say more so the listener knows how much work goes into this.
No, I was very much aware of the restrictions that I have, keeping the privacy of the experience with the children. But they are very lively and they chatter over everything. I took that 20-minute segment that aired. It was hours of audio, and I got it done. But wow, what challenges we experience in our work. And audience, I have to say, you always have respect for radio production.
And I remember when we chatted a few months ago, we talked about just how much public radio is really a labor of love. Like, you go out into an event or a space, and you get, for me, I get too excited. I try to collect as much tape and as much interviews and as much everything as I can. And then I go home and I'm overwhelmed with how to narrow it down to, you know, 7, 8, 10 minutes. It really is. It is a labor of love that I think is absolutely worth it.
And a true art. It's a true art. So what do we have next?
Okay, so the one we have next is actually a Star Talk favorite from our dear Keith Hubbard. I was curious what Star Talk favorites Keith have. And he said that one of his is from the April 26th show about the Bennu sample. And he wrote me a quick note that said, that this was one of his favorite astronomy stories to produce over this past year, because it shows that the conditions for life are more common than we thought. So here is Keith Hubbard's Star Talk favorite from 2025.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The OSIRIS-REx spacecraft collected samples of material from the asteroid Bennu and returned the samples to Earth. Two fasteners securing the capsule were not able to be removed with tools approved for use. When NASA scientists were finally able to remove the fasteners and access the samples inside the capsule, they found 52 grams of dust and pebbles inside. This amount was added to the 70 grams of material found on the outside of the capsule for a total sample size of 122 grams.
The asteroid Bennu is one-third of a mile across and was once part of a larger asteroid. The analysis revealed that Bennu had the right ingredients for life. Scientists found 11 minerals that are formed when salty water evaporates, an indication that Bennu's parent asteroid harbored liquid water beneath its surface. Of the 20 amino acids that create the proteins required for life on Earth, 14 were found on Bennu. Also discovered were the 5 nucleobases life on Earth uses to transmit genetic instructions within RNA and DNA. Scientists also found ammonia at levels that are 100 times higher than that found in the soils on Earth. Ammonia is essential for life on Earth because under the right conditions, it can create complex molecules like amino acids. While the findings do not show evidence of life, they do show that the conditions for life to emerge were likely prevalent throughout the early solar system.
If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
And that was Keith Hubbard with his 2025 Star Talk favorite. Rosie, I'm also thinking about, we didn't have enough time to play it on this show, but when you sent over your list, you also mentioned the deep dive with Keith Hubbard.
Yes, it was so nice hearing him speaking on the airwaves as a human being, a person, and you engaging. You really have a gift of conversation. It's wonderful the way you did that. And I'm so happy because he's very knowledgeable and very eager to share. And it seems like people in the community reacted. I saw a lot of interest in telescopes and astronomy that followed that. So,
Ooh, yes, people are listening.
Yes, it's nice. We need natural beauty in our lives.
Yeah.
And this kind of thing, it's nice to look up, especially in the winter.
Definitely. And Keith Hubbard brings that energy and calm to the airwaves. Rosie, what is next on our list?
I have to say, I started laughing when you asked me to be part of this show. I thought, I remember back in August and we were about to celebrate Woodstock again, and she did a cannabis. She went to a cannabis growing. It wasn't hemp. It was cannabis. And I'm like, oh, yes, I grew up when it was all illegal. People were in jail for holding one joint. But the attitude at this festival was like, hey, man, let's get over it and go to town. And I just thought, wow, listen to this thing. So let's could you please fill in the audience what I am talking about?
Yes. OK, so just a little context. We went to this festival called Cannabliss in Delhi, and this is the first one that they ever hosted because the laws around cannabis have changed and they're new. And so this is their first one, and it attracted a lot of cannabis growers, but also people who are canna curious. So this is just a little snippet from that segment.
A different shade of green has hit the Catskills mountainous terrain, cannabis. Last weekend, a new festival called Cannabliss in the Catskills held its first ever event in Delhi, New York at Maple Shade Farm. One attendee, Jill, played Jenga in the farm's 200-acre field, where she said it was nice to be at an event where she didn't feel judged for enjoying cannabis.
Tell me a little bit about how the day has been for you guys.
Oh, it's been a blast. It's been a blast. I've been getting high and talking to all these great people, and I've just been having, we've been having the best of time.
Maple Shade Farm is a 200-acre farm typically used for weddings and music festivals. But event organizer Joanne Kudrevich of Raven's View Genetics says the owners wanted to do something different this year.
So these are our neighbors, and they had approached me because they do huge festivals. They'd approached me to see if we could do something with cannabis. And so we brought the weed to the farm, basically.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. Wow. And yes, times have changed and I've changed too, but I just know that it's a lot stronger now than it used to be.
I think that's what the kids say. And I, you know, when I went to this festival, Rosie, I had no idea what to expect. It was beautiful. The farm that they hosted it on was gorgeous. everyone was kind of just doing their own thing. And it was a nice, refreshing scene for cannabis, which I think has been stigmatized over the last few decades. And I think this was just such a fun, curious segment to bring into Farm and Country.
Yes, it's true. It's not wacky weed.
I love that. Okay, so I think we might have time for one more. And I actually think this might have been on my favorite, Ronald's favorite, and possibly your favorite.
Absolutely. The Pepper Festival in Wayne County. And you were in the garden with
Irene Soloway.
Thank you, Irene.
Thank you. Yes. Okay, so this was actually recorded before Pepper Fest. I met with a Pepper Fest planning committee to talk through what they had planned for the event. And we kind of just went through Irene's garden and learned a little bit more about how she got into growing peppers. So here is some of that conversation.
In Irene Soloway's garden in Wayne County, Pennsylvania, there's bright orange marigolds, sunflowers, and towards the back, lots and lots of peppers.
This is Pepper Joe, which is a sweet pepper. It's actually, we had it in our frittata this morning. I don't know if you noticed it. It's very, very sweet. It's like candy sweet. And so that's going to be for the zero level for the you know.
Okay. Oh, this one's zero.
Yeah, you don't have to be brave to do it. We encourage people to, even if they start with one, zero, you know, and maybe go to zero to one.
She and a few of her neighbors are organizing the first annual Pepper Fest on Saturday, October 4th. Irene Soloway and Anna B. Ott are two of the event organizers and pepper growers themselves. When they first started growing peppers, they said they had no idea what they were getting into when they started their journey. But that's the fun of it. We sat around the kitchen table with coffee and breakfast, along with other members of the planning committee. Here is some of that conversation.
I'm Irene Soloway. I've been in Tyler Hill since 1991, and we started a garden, had no idea that it would be a mostly digging of rocks and fending off animals, and discovered that peppers were actually easy to grow up here, and the little rodents and groundhogs and weren't interested. So peppers became our main crop.
I'm Anna. I'm actually a painter, but I've been growing peppers since COVID, actually. That's what it started, 2020, on my balcony in Bucks County. And since then, I've been experimenting this. At one point, I had like 20 different varieties, and they're doing very well because I had lots of sun. But once we moved here 2 years ago, I'm trying to grow peppers here. I find it a little bit challenging because our property has a lot of shade in it, but I'm adjusting my practice. So hopefully next year we'll have better results.
Around this time, I started thinking, well, let's check out some peppers.
It's kind of starting here, is the sweeter ones, and going down to the more powerful ones. Most peppers start out green. And some of them go like green, green, purple, yellow, red,
orange. Yeah.
And
actually they change their taste and heat level with the when they change the color.
Oh.
We had our favorite pepper is Aji Gold Limon, and when it's green, it's so like, it almost tastes like soap. It's very strange taste. But when it's get like bright yellow, then it's so perfumey. It's like very fruity, but also it's really good heat, but then it's also very like really amazing. No, it's kind of sweet, but it's very hard to describe the taste. It's kind of sweet and it's very aromatic. It's very pleasant.
Y'all, I can't believe it, but I think we have come to the end of the show, Rosie.
And is it the end of the year also?
It is the end of the year. It is December 27th. We have 4 days.
Okay, but you know what the good news is?
Tell me.
That neither of us are going anywhere.
We are not going anywhere because we have all of 2026 to continue doing Farming Country.
And I'm not going anywhere. Whenever I could get invited back, I'll be here.
Oh, yes.
It's nice that the audience stops me and says, hi, how you doing? And I always say, but she's doing a great job, isn't she? Yes, she is. People love you. They might think of me, but you're good.
That's so, so sweet. And I think that is the beauty of Farm and Country, is that our Farm and Country family keeps growing. Before we hop off, I just want to really thank Rosie and Ronald for helping me recap the year. I could not have done 2025 without you.